You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Florida, we are heard on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're also heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're heard on the World Wide Web.
We are heard on the World Wide Web at 1510wwbc.com, and you also can download the app WWBC. Listen in anywhere in this beautiful globe. Listen in on our station.
That's right. And we sit here every Monday, my co-host Ellen O'Neill and Samantha Nazario and myself, and we heat up the airwaves. We really get heated at times with our conversations, but all good stuff, stuff that comes from our heart. All of us are trying to make our world a kind of gentler place where people leave a footprint behind for beautiful grandchildren and the next generation, that we can leave the earth a better place than we found it. And one of the ways you can listen to our shows on our podcast is going to the WWBC website, since the Viewpoint with Sita and Friends website is kind of malfunctioning right now. So Samantha, tell our guest and our listeners how to tune in to listen, to download a podcast and listen.
Happy Monday, everybody. You can find that on Zeta Media, Inc. You can also find the directions on Viewpoint with Zeta Media and Friends. And you can also find us by going to www.1510wbc.com. You're going to hit the on-demand button. You're going to select the date of the show you'd like to see on the calendar. And then you simply hit play, and you can listen to any show archived all the way 7 years back, I believe they've been with this station, Paul.
That's right.
All those shows are there and archived. If you don't get to hear us live, you can always go back and enjoy the show that way. And thank you so much for tuning in to Viewpoint with Zeta and Friends.
And we have an action-packed show today. We in our studio, Mr. Roy Jones drove in from Tampa. Welcome to our show. And
it's great to be here.
Yeah, and just if you're going to be on the second segment with us. Just so that our listeners know who to look out for in the next segment to listen to, tell us your title with Eckerd Connects.
Well, I'm the Chief Development Officer at Eckerd Connects.
And yes.
So we not only work right here at in the Treasure Coast and Space Coast, beautiful Brevard County, but we work statewide in Florida and in 20 states coast to coast.
Yeah, and you know, every time I see Eckerd Connects, I think about the Eckerd drugstores.
Yeah.
And what a legacy they left behind for us, all of us, and all the advocacy that you, Mr. Jones, and others are doing with Eckerd Connects. And we're going to hear all about that in the second segment. We do need to have a kind of gentler world. And I think the only way that can happen is if all of us collectively change our behaviors towards each other on this earthly journey called life. Like our cultures, listen, be reasonable. Agree to disagree, be respectful. That's what it takes. And some
open
of us,
conversation, right, an exchange of dialogue.
Right. And some of us are blessed to have been given a platform, a voice, where we can use our voices for the common good. And it's not always all peaches and cream, but we can do that, because with age comes experience, and with experience comes wisdom. And for a person like me, who happens to work in a nursing home and chat with the elderly while I give them their medications and wrap their bandages and take care of them, I learn a lot. And I love it. It is my gift to the world, right? To take care of the elderly. So, and that's how we have this radio show. And so I know that our guest who's calling in, Kay Appleton, is on the phone. And she also has a story to tell. So, Kay, thank you for taking the time to call in from Michigan.
Yeah.
How are you doing? Did you go for your hike?
I did. It was absolutely beautiful out. The sun's shining. The temperatures are in the upper 50s. It's beautiful.
And, you know, you've had some tragedy in your life during COVID, and you've taken that frown, that sadness, and you've turned it into a work of love, and you made yourself productive. So tell our listening audience a little bit about you being an author and what happened during COVID that turned you, Kay, into an author.
Well, it started, my husband was diagnosed with metastatic lung cancer. He had one little spot on his lung, but it metastasized into his bones. And we were told in February that it was terminal. And then, you know, he didn't pass away till the end of May. It was horrible because we were in the midst of COVID, and it was just my daughter and I taking care of him. She moved home for a while, my adult daughter, to help me care for him. And to come to grips with not only what was happening to my husband, my having to sit bedside watching him slowly pass away. I mean, he was a very tall man, and by the end of all of this, and I don't want this to be too tragic sounding, but by the end of it, he only weighed about 110 pounds, and he was over 6 feet tall. So it was excruciating. But instead of wallowing and giving up and, I don't know, sinking into a deep depression, I decided to put it all into writing. And I never intended to publish, but in the beginning, when I started writing, it was to help me deal with what our marriage had become, because he had turned into an abusive alcoholic. So I started writing just to release myself of all of the anger I had towards him, just to get rid of it all. And then halfway through my writing, I realized that as tragic as this was, that I had a new life to begin after he passed. And what did I want that to look like? So the book, which I titled The Mating Habits of Puffins, turned into a romance novel. It turned into something that I would like to see happen, maybe, and then I just released the second book, which is just called Trust, but it's the subtitle is The Mating Habits of Puffins Book 2, because so many people reached out and wanted to know what was going to happen with these characters that I had created, that I couldn't just leave it off as, well, maybe they'll have a happy ending.
Yeah, it sounds like a Bollywood film. You know, sometimes I watch a Bollywood film and then I want to know more, and I'm like, oh, they should do that in India where they have like a series of films, you know? So where did you get the title from? Because I was looking at the title and I'm like, puffins? Like, you know?
Well, because I've been to Scotland several times. I've got some Scottish ancestry, and the first time I ever went there, it felt like I had come home. And it was weird because I had never been there before. But my grandmother was Scottish, and the most magical thing that ever happened to me in the several times I've been to Scotland is my daughter and I took a boat trip out to Staffa Island, and we climbed to the top of the island and watched the puffins hop. I sat on the ground, and they just hopped all around my feet, and we watched them fly down and get fish and bring them back up to their nest. And they make this little whirring sound. It sounds like a little teeny mini chainsaw. I just fell in love with them. I absolutely fell in love with these little birds that are about the size of your foot, you know, if you were to put your foot upright. And so I thought, you know, I just thought it would be a cute title. I kicked around many, many titles. But in the book, my lead character mentions that she has to go see the puffins, that was one of the reasons she came back to Scotland. I don't know, the title just popped into my head. And because it's a romance novel, you know, I just thought it would be cute.
Yeah, it's about freedom, it's about a murder investigation, and the romance in the book is quite unexpected as well.
Yes, yeah. And because this woman just got out of an abusive relationship, she just went through a very traumatic year. She's not at all sure she wants to be tied down again. She's not at all sure she wants to give anybody a second chance. You know, it was like she wanted to escape everything and kind of rediscover who she was again.
Yeah.
Because she lost that over the years of being with an abusive spouse and then being tied down, you know, caring for him. She just wanted to escape and be her own person. And then this man comes along who's very intriguing, and she kind of can't shake him. She keeps thinking about him, and so this romance, you know, that's probably not really good for either one of them, but neither one of them can walk away from it. Sort of, it develops, and they both have to take a leap of faith, because he, you find out in the book, he's had a previous bad relationship too. So both of these people have to set aside their fears about it and their anger about it, and give both give themselves a second chance to try and love again. And so it really is a lot about second chances. And second chances in your 50s. This couple is, they're both in their 50s. And so who thinks they're ever going to have a second chance at romance when you get to be that age? You know?
So. I hope that in my mind there's not a cap on romance, Kay, and that at any age you can get a second chance in life. And we hope one day you're writing a book about your second chance.
I hope so. It would be nice. I'm going back to Scotland as soon as everything opens up, so hopefully, maybe I'll meet my guy. I don't know.
Well, my name is Samantha Kay. I'm a co-host here with Zita. It's fabulous to have you on the show today. I'm curious, why does the story take place in Scotland and not Michigan?
Well, a lot of it is in Michigan, but it takes place in Scotland because that's where my lead character takes off to. And that's where I, myself, am going to be taking off to as soon as, you know, travel restrictions are lessened. Because that, you know, like I say, when I first landed in Scotland, it felt like I was coming home. Everything felt familiar. Everything felt comfortable. It was very strange.
Yeah.
I've never in my life felt, like, in danger there. And so I don't know. I'm going to go, and I'm going to go back by myself, and I'm going to stay for about 5 weeks, and all on my own. I'm just going to sort of rediscover who I am.
I think you're going to like it. You know, of course, I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, and we've had Scottish people in our lives. And I actually had a good friend who was a flight attendant from Scotland, and they are very kind. They're very warm, very loving people, and they love the sun. She just loved coming to Florida and spending a couple of weeks with me and the sun. But I think when you go to Scotland too, you're going to be amazed at the scenery. She talks so much about the hillsides and how people appreciate sitting outdoors. It's a very idyllic lifestyle kind of thing. And I think for somebody who's just been through losing a spouse of 34 years and coming out of an abusive relationship, and not being able to have that second chance with your husband. Because, I mean, most of us would prefer to have that second chance and reform the person that we love and do what we can to save that person. But you didn't get that chance because he died. So you might be able to find that in Scotland.
Maybe she'll end up moving there.
I don't know. I certainly, that's why I stuck around for so long. Because, you know, in the beginning, he was the love of my life. And I just kept hoping year after year that he would get help, that he would stop drinking, because I did. I wanted to, you know, our daughter went off to college, and then she moved, you know, to the other side of the country, and I thought, this is our second chance. This could be beautiful. We could start all over again, and it just never happened. So I feel like that was snatched from me, too, not just, you know, from his illness, but because of the alcoholism, you know.
Well,
it changes people.
And you know, Kay, one of the things that, I mean, for my listeners who are tuning in, this is Zita Begee on Viewpoint with Zita and Friends. And I have to say that my father was one of the men in Trinidad and Tobago who was responsible for sobering a lot of alcoholics. He was one of the founders for Alcoholics Anonymous in Trinidad and Tobago in the south part of the island. And I remember...
Wow.
Yeah, I always think about it. And I remember people coming to our home, and they were from, you know, all walks of lives, and they came from all different cultures. And my dad would say, why is it when you go to one of the most expensive weddings or affairs or events, the first thing people do is put a glass in your hand? And that glass is normally filled with alcohol. And it starts there from people trying to be socially accepted into a certain lifestyle. And before you know it, you're full-blown drunk.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Yeah.
So what would you like people to learn or understand about the characters that you brought alive in your book?
I think the resilience of the lead character's name's Catherine, but she calls herself Kat. And I think because she's not going to let what happened wreck her, I guess, she's determined to have a life, even though it's scary, you know, and even though she's carrying a lot of anger and a lot of baggage. I think, you know, making that leap and saying, okay, well, maybe it is worth giving love a second chance, you know, as hard as it is, as scary as it is, because, you know, she doesn't want to be hurt all over again. I mean, she's loosely based on me, but I actually wish I had her gumption. I guess I'm going to find out if I do, because I am going to go to Scotland by myself, but I think she's a stronger person than I am, and she's more adventurous. And I think I like that. I like when people can take tragedy and turn it into something not so debilitating. You know.
Well, I think everyone has a story to tell, right? And that's what we do. You'll find that a lot of people who open a nonprofit, that's why they do it. Like Samantha, my co-host here, she's opening her own nonprofit to help with diversity and, you know, thing, because something happened in your life, right?
A lot of things, yeah.
Right, and you want people, minorities, to have a say in elections,
exactly.
Right?
And we live in a county where we service 21 different languages, but we have no way to bridge the gap, so we're kind of going to be the bridge that brings it all together. And the things I've been through with my son and the people I love have given me so many causes that I'm going to put them into one place. And Zita's a great motivator.
Yeah.
So
Kay, how much of your story is based on true events?
Well, everything about the abusive ex-husband, you know, the
I feel like I want, I feel like even though he's gone from the planet, like, I feel like he should have been saved. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, you kind of, now as you talk about him and how he died and how you wrote the book and you really wanted to have the second chance, I think part of you regret that you didn't have that second chance with him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a big part of me. Yeah. I, you know, I can't, there's not a day that goes by that I don't have regrets that, you know, and I tried everything. That's the thing. That's the other thing about alcoholism. You can do absolutely everything you can think of to help someone, but in the end, it's up to them. And if they won't do anything to help themselves, there's nothing you can do. I tried the loving way. I tried getting angry. I tried, you know, appealing to his for his daughter's sake. You know, I'm angry that I didn't get my second chance with him, because I was really looking forward to it. We talked about the future. We talked about, you know, where we'd end up when we're both 80. And I don't have that now. And so part of me is mad at him about that. And part of me is sad that I won't have that.
Well, hopefully your book would help other people, because there are so many people, Kay, who are in the same situation. And whether it's alcohol or domestic violence or some other stuff that's happening in their lives, something is happening with the American family today where people need to sit back and relax and watch and see what's important. I mean, we all saw during COVID how many people said, well, wait a minute, I'm really enjoying my mortgage payments for the first time. I'm enjoying my children. I'm enjoying my stuff. I'm enjoying my yard. And so, I mean, I think your book will be able to help people, like you said, to have a second chance.
I hope so. And it brings a lot of things, you know, the whole COVID experience, I think, has made people realize what is actually important and what isn't anymore, you know. And I hope it brings families closer together, and I hope it you know, pulls forward what we should really be thinking about. So hopefully, I don't know.
One of the places you should try to market this book is the country clubs. Because there's a lot of people that drink alcohol.
Don't say anything. Yeah.
And then they Uber home. I know for a fact. I have some friends. Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
You may want to look at places where people frequent, and there's a booze flowing like water sometime. If you have a party. Yeah. My father had a rum shop too, so I should know this. And we would say oftentimes, Pa, why do you sober people up? but you have a rum shop. And he'd be like, well, I need to feed you all. I need to have money to raise my 18 kids, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, what made you decide to tell the story of how you feel about your life and second chances and trying to change the way you think and the way you see the world? Why at the time of while waiting when your husband was dying? I mean, you could have written the story a few years ago, but you chose to do it now.
I think the fact that he was dying and I had to spend so many hours and he, you know, in quiet sitting next to him, I needed something to do. I couldn't watch TV, so I started, you know, like you said, it started as my just venting my anger at him for not getting help. It started with me just writing down everything that, you know, that we went through and that we could have done, and then it morphed into something else. So, and then once he passed away, I thought, you know what, there are other women. This was one of the things that came out that shocked me, is that women don't think emotional abuse is actually abuse. They don't equate it with physical abuse. And I guess I wanted to bring that, to shed some light on that my husband never hit me, but he was very emotionally abusive to me, and that can be just as damaging. And so if there's other women out there that are in, you know, relationships like that, maybe, you know, they'll see it as actual abuse. Maybe it'll help them to know that they're not alone, that they're not losing their mind thinking that this is not good. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just felt like a story I had to tell, and I just felt like getting it out there.
Well,
know.
October is Domestic Violence Month, so that's great that you're both, you know, that we're able to touch on emotional abuse, because you're right. It's just, it's probably even more hurtful than domestic or physical.
It's the one that doesn't leave a physical
abuse.
Scar. It leaves
that's
a mental
right.
scar for the rest of your life.
Right.
You can't take back words.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, so how can people buy your book? I mean, is it available on Amazon? Give us your website. Wherever they
right
can find
now,
it.
Yeah, right now, both books are available both on Kindle and paperback on Amazon, and you just search The Mating Habits of Puffins, and K is spelled K-A-E, K Appleton. I also, if anyone's in the Ann Arbor area, I've got books in Nicholas Bookshop in Ann Arbor. So those are the two places so far.
Yeah, and is there a sequel to the first book?
Yeah, it's called Trust, but then the subtitle is The Mating Habits of Puffins Book 2, because so many people said, you can't just, we need to know what happens to Kat and David. You have to continue this story, which I didn't intend to do. But then, like I say, the characters took on a life of their own, and I wanted to see what was going to happen with them. So, yeah, there is a book 2.
Yeah, well, they were born out of you. You made them. So now people are interested in what's happening with their lives. So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how did you, I mean, you were designing costumes post-college. You were sewing costumes and you were reenacting plays and theater groups. How did that play into you writing the book?
I don't know, except that my chosen career didn't really bring me too much money. You know what I mean? Being in Michigan, theater groups don't pay a lot of money, so... That was one of the problems with my never being able to leave an abusive relationship, is that I didn't have a full-blown career. But I think, you know, in general, you know, going into stuff, like, you know, something like costume design or historical clothing, you know, stuff, it's just a part of my creative side. I guess my brain just works that way. I am no good at math, but I can show you a Henry VIII costume, because that's just how my brain works.
Yeah.
So maybe
creative.
The writing was just one more side of, if I'm not doing something creative, I feel gloomy and stifled. And so I think the book just came out of another creative part of my brain.
Well, you know, you touched on emotional abuse. You touched on financial abuse too. But with the remaining 1 minute that we have left, I feel like you're still grieving. You're still grieving for the life you had, the life you couldn't have with him, and you're grieving right now for Kay and what Kay has lost. Are you seeing at least a therapist or a support group to help you before you go to Scotland?
Yes, I am. I see a therapist once a week. Well, we do it video chatting, and she's helped a lot. And she's helping me learn to process, because I used to, whenever I started getting sad about my husband, I'd turn it into anger. I'd get mad at him. I'd yell at his ashes that are sitting, you know, in an urn in my kitchen. And she's trying to get me to go ahead and feel the sadness, because people heal better if they just acknowledge the sad.
Well, Kay, so, we want to thank you for coming on today. It was an amazing first segment. We look forward to hearing about the next chapter of your adventure. And I like to say all the time, you're not a survivor. You're going to thrive and move forward in this adventure called life. And Viewpoint with Zita and Friends will be back after these commercials. And thank you so much again, Kay, for joining us today.
Portions of Viewpoint with Zita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Zita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Zita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, as well as online.
That's right, on 1510. That's 1510wwbc.com and everywhere around the world on the app. That's WWBC.
And now we have our second guest, and I am so delighted you took the time to come in and visit with us today. Mr. Jones is here, right?
Yes.
And, you know, influence is leadership. And for some of us, we do the right thing, even though it's not popular, when people are not looking. And that's Mr. Roy Jones, always doing what's right. Your leadership skills, all the stuff you've done in your career, in your life, in your existence on this planet, you're blazing a trail for so many people to follow.
Well, thank you, Zita.
So welcome to our show, and tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, your bio is extensive.
Well, first
working
of all,
with the homeless and everything else.
only believe about half what you read. But, first of all, I just want to say thank you. You've been a supporter of Eckerd Connects in the past, and just wanted to say thank you for doing that. And I know our mutual friend Stanley Briz here from Space Coast, Brevard County. He's our director of Prevention and Family Services. You're one of the heroes.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for supporting.
Yeah, us. Stanley and I connected because we also have a Trinidad connection.
Uh-huh.
His family is his grandparents is from Trinidad, and so we became really good friends. And I love what he's doing, and I love what Eckerd Connects does. But so you've traveled, Mr. Roy Jones, to a dozen nations, the continent of Africa. You worked on Mercy Ships International. You ran a successful campaign in Guatemala in 1991. And I haven't heard Guatemala, anything about Guatemala for a long time. So it's good that you did do that. And you also now you are the chief developmental officer for Eckerd Connects.
So it really has been an interesting career. I mean, at Mercy Ships, of course, and a lot of folks may not have heard of this, but there, believe it or not, our countries, especially in on the African continent, where there's no medical infrastructure, and so Mercy Ships had floating hospitals, and they would go in and they were teaching hospitals, and so we would treat. Not only would we treat patients in many of these countries, but we would train local doctors and nurses to practice medicine.
So you guys were there before doctors. With our borders were there.
Well, we both operate in different ways, and we many times operate in different countries. Of course, there's 54 nations on the continent of Africa, so it's a big place, and you know, many countries. You know, I've been to Sierra Leone, for example, lots of different countries. Some of these countries, you know, in the nation of Guinea, for example, there were 7.4 million people, only 450 doctors in the whole continent. The average life expectancy was 46 years old. To be able to go in there and go into places like that and teach people how to practice medicine, very different than how we do medical degrees here in the United States, but it was pretty amazing to see them, when we leave, be able to practice medicine and to be able to train surgical teams to do special things. So,
right.
So that was a special time in my life. You know, I also then worked with the poor and the homeless here across the United States. It's an organization, a network of homeless shelters called CityGate, and did training. You know, I'm one of these unique people. I've slept in over 60 homeless shelters around the country, mm-hmm. and helped these homeless shelters to raise resources locally. And that's really been my background is in training, you know, helping folks understand how to do development, how to do corporate sponsorships, how to reach out to the community, do community outreach, and really connect people with their passion in what that nonprofit does. And so that's been my background. Eckerd Connects brought me in about 2 years ago, initially to do training for the board of directors, and then one thing led to another.
And you connected.
And we connected.
You connected. Well, well, that's the thing about nonprofits such as Eckerd Connects, is you're able to sit with people and reason with them. and teach them and let them understand that if you have this much and you could give a little, how far it goes.
Yeah, it has a tremendous impact. And you look at, Eckerd Connects, you know about what we do here on the Space Coast and Treasure Coast, Brevard County, helping family and transitional services, homeless prevention services, lots of different things here locally. We also have a program called Project Bridge, which helps primarily young people coming out of Department of Juvenile Justice with job training to be able to land on their feet, get a job, have training, have skilled opportunities to build a career for themselves so they don't go back to crime.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of different things around the state of Florida, but what most people don't know is that Eckerd Connects operates in 20 states across the country. We work with more than 50,000 clients, the majority of them young people between the ages of 16 and 24. And we run Job Corps, for example, in 8 states across the country. We run workforce training programs in more than 100 locations coast to coast. And so helping people, some of which were homeless, some of which were coming out of the Department of Justice, some of which just needed a job, helping those folks get the job skills they needed.
To survive.
To survive.
Right.
And, more than that, thrive.
That's right.
Because what these people are able to do then is break the cycle of poverty, because we do see that in the United States. We have 166 offices across the country. Some of them, and we've mentioned poverty in Africa, some of them in locations, and people say, is there really poverty like that in America?
Yes.
You bet there is.
Yeah, but seen it.
I've seen it.
And I can
take you there.
I often wonder, because I have been part of Eckerd Connects for so long, I often wonder, Ruth and Jack Eckerd, this legendary power couple, they started this nonprofit in 1968. And what vision they had to connect with people. Mm. And their legacy lives on. What is it about them and this nonprofit that thrives versus so many others that didn't
really
make it?
It really does breathe through the life of the organization. And, and of course, Jack and Ruth left long before I was involved in Eckerd Connects, but I feel like I have a little
sliver
of it. Their children, grandchildren are very involved still in this organization. They left a legacy through their family. They left Eckerd Connects was founded when Jack was here, and Jack and Ruth were here and doing things and having an impact across the country. It really was, when you look at even the quote you see most attributed to Jack is, it's about the kids.
Yeah.
And
they love
really,
children.
They love children. They loved changing the lives, changing the trajectory of these young people forever.
Yeah. Well, they believed in humanity. And I think some of they had expanded their services to include foster care and adoption, workforce development, aid for the homeless, and transitional services for the young, which is what you're doing as well, and so much more. What was their mission statement?
I mean, it really is providing vision and hope for the youth of America. And when you look at the founding itself, and you talk about 50 years ago. It's pretty staggering just to think about those years involved. But the founding itself, there was a home juvenile detention facility called the Dozier School for Boys. And the state came in and discovered that more than 250 graves were found on that site of young people killed while in incarceration. And it just broke their heart. And that's when initially they started out, they said, we've got to have an alternative that's better than that. And Jack and Ruth began to form camps around the country, starting right here in Florida, reached out, working with the Department of Juvenile Justice to have a better alternative than these types of abusive detention centers.
Yeah.
And it was a totally different way. It really revolutionized the way that the country,
the state, and Florida
people,
too, the way we treat our kids
and so it is it's changed that. Now the organization has grown so much, and Our current CEO talks about moving upstream. And the greatest thing we can do for young people today, especially young people in poverty, is to give them hope of a future, hope of a career, hope that they can break the cycle of poverty and climb out of that. And that's what we've been doing. I mean, over the last 5 years, more than 250,000 young people across the country have
connected.
Gotten job skills,
yeah.
Got connected, got an internship that led to an employment opportunity. It's just a staggering thing, you know.
It is, and so great to have shows such as mine and other shows in newspapers and everything, just, you know, talking about the accomplishments of Echoed Connects. Because I remember when I just read about what happened in Canada with the Native Americans, that they had found all those graves. And every time you hear a story about children who are found in the earth that no one accounted for them, it breaks your heart.
Oh, it does.
And just like the Dozier home,
it,
I mean.
It really was the catalyst, and it just has led now to hundreds of thousands of young people whose lives have been changed forever. You know, when you think about this, the places we operate, you know, more than 65% of our clients are people of color. Who really have faced institutional racism. There's a reason they're unemployed. And empowering people with the skills they need to step up and climb above and beyond that and beat the odds, that's really what Echoed Connects is about. You know, we do some great things, and we're reaching out to people really at all levels. Not every person, not every family we work with is in poverty. Some people just... are temporarily in a situation where they need job training, but the vast majority are. And, you know, we're trying to do a few things this holiday season that I kind of want to let people know about.
Yeah.
We have a campaign we're running right now called Hungry for Hope. And between Thanksgiving and Christmas, our goal is to provide a holiday meal for 5,000 families. And so, again, we work with over 50,000 families.
Yeah, but, and you're building such strong and lasting relationships, too, when you do stuff like that for the community.
Oh, and you just wouldn't believe the number of clients that truly become raving fans of Echoed Connects. I mean, they are alumni for life.
And yeah.
A lot of these folks, move into, whether it's through our Job Corps Center, where they get licensed as in the trades, whether it's... welder, plumber, electrician, carpenter, or vet tech, nursing assistant, pharmacy tech. You know, they get jobs, and many of them even end up self-employed, and they give back. And so, you know, building a culture of philanthropy where people care about helping others like they have been helped, I mean, it's an amazing thing to see happen.
So, Mr. Jones, you went from being the vice president of development at Mercy Ships International, where the national charity climbed during your tenure there to what, almost from 40 million to 80 million?
That's correct.
And then now you're at helping out with Echoed Connects. You bring 35 years of experience in marketing and fundraising, and I could see why. Because when we speak to you, it comes from your heart. And I think that's what people see when they donate to Echoed Connects, when they assist with a meal, when they assist with helping someone to have hope. I mean, you are the face of Echoed Connects, and I really am so grateful that you took the time to come in, because now I connect you with you, and
well,
I could share this information with my friends.
I've got the greatest job in the world. I get to be the person in the middle. I'm the matchmaker. You know, I identify the donor's passion, where their heart is, whether it's a business person, if you're a business leader here and you want to do something to have an impact this holiday season, we're working with some local grocers right now, and for about $25, we can feed a family of four Thanksgiving or Christmas meal. Your company can get involved in that and help us fund those. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you're just an individual and you want to help. $25 feeds a family of four. Step up and help us sponsor some of those meals. I get to be the person in the middle that identifies that donor that wants to do something special, wants to make a gift of significance, and connects them with a need, a real need. The majority of our clients are over 18 years old. It's kind of unique. one of the things that we do, and our listeners cannot see this, but one of the things that we do, we teach our young people, every time we award a success award, which is a scholarship or gift, or even these families that are going to receive a holiday meal, the only thing we ask, and it's part of our culture, is we want them to write a thank you letter. And in thousands of these notes, and you can't see it, but I'll explain it. We buy very inexpensive mats and frames, and the young people actually design the mat that kind of borders the thank you letter that goes in the middle. And we frame these thank you letters, and we send them out. When I meet with donors face-to-face, guess what? I bring a thank you letter from one of our clients thanking them.
Well, and support. You know what? I think it's awesome that you do that, because people have lost the ability to write a letter.
Yes.
It is part of our training program.
Yeah.
And literally, we're teaching job skills. We're teaching how to interview. We're teaching how to dress for an interview. The other thing we teach is how to write a good old-fashioned thank you letter and truly be appreciative for the support that people are giving. Because that's something our clients really have a good understanding of. Yes, we do get government support to fund some of these programs, whether it's Job Corps, that's contract through the Department of Labor, some of our workforce programs come from Department of Labor to state, to us locally to implement. Foster care, of course, we get state funding to help do that. But our clients realize that it's a public-private partnership. And when a donor gives money for some of these programs, it helps us provide aid directly to the client.
Yeah.
It doesn't pay for my salary. It doesn't pay for our office overhead. That's been paid.
It's not admin,
It's not admin costs. As a matter of fact, when you look, we just finished our annual report. 94% of every dollar we raise goes directly to our clients.
That's amazing for a nonprofit. I've heard at the highest 91, so 94.
It's off the chart.
Yeah.
So basically, in plain old English, for people who don't understand what that means, and not in the nonprofit sector, means literally 94 cents of every dollar you give to Ecker Connects goes back into servicing their clients and the community that's in need.
That's
amazing.
Usually the average nationwide, and there are about 1.6 million charities, nonprofits in the United States, and the average is about 80%,
right?
And 20% on admin.
And you have the experience where you have seen the value of that dollar, because you worked on political campaigns as well.
Sure.
And you saw where people donated to a person who's running for office, and where that money went. And now you're seeing people donating, and this money is going towards Ecker Connects and all the services and programs.
Accountability and transparency is very, very important. You know, again, it's part of our culture. And it's why we have had supporters that have been with us for 50 years. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing to be part of. And teaching that and building, continuing to build upon that culture of philanthropy with our clients, where they know, hey, it's not just about writing a thank you, but guess what? When I get my job, I can't tell you how many times it's happened, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. The first check that person writes,
yeah, it is a good feeling. Wow. It's a good feeling, right?
A donation to.
So you've been married to Melinda.
Melinda, that's right.
For 39 years.
It'll be 40 on December 21st.
So Ecker Connects has become a family affair. You've also written a couple of books. Mm-hmm. We need people like you to teach about financial literacy as well. Mm. There's so many people nowadays that don't understand the value of saving, the way our parents did it, and giving back to society. So tell us a little bit about your books.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, one book I have is called Rainmaking, and it is just as the name implies, but it's showing donors and supporters, you know, how to plant a donation and see it grow.
Save for a rainy day.
And it really is about, being good stewards and really identifying where the donor has a passion, because before I get there, 9 times out of 10, the truth is, it's probably 99 out of 100. The donor already knows what kind of project they're interested in. They already have that one thing.
That passion,
and it's my job to find that passion, and then connect them to you know, to one of our clients that's part of the 166 programs nationwide.
Yeah. So there's always that one person that don't have money, but they'd like to donate to the organization in some way. How can people get involved if they don't have money?
Oh, there's so many ways. You know, we have, for example, right here, not far from this office, our Brevard office, we have we call it a room of hope. And those hope centers are where people donate clothing, some new, some used. But where, whether it's somebody going through our homeless prevention program, or one of the young people going into their first job, a young mother, single mom who's on her own that needs some school clothes for her child, can go in and just and literally go on a little shopping spree.
And they could volunteer.
They volunteer. Again, those rooms have to be stocked. There's ways to get involved, and time, talent, and treasure. It's not just
and
about
energy
the treasure.
And energy,
it's
right?
It's energy. It
so,
goes
so
a
there's
long way.
So many for our listeners who are just tuning in. We're speaking with Mr. Roy Jones, who has over 35 years of experience in marketing, fundraising, and major gift procurement, and he is now the chief developmental officer with Eckerd Connects. So with so many nonprofits in the United States and so many right here in Brevard and Florida, tell us what stands out about Eckerd Connects.
Well, I mean, we're really teaching people how to break the cycle of poverty. And I've worked with a lot of other nonprofits that do good work, that feed people, that clothe people, that help people in crisis. But what Eckerd Connect is trying to do is, as I said, get further upstream. Help them with employable skills, then help them get a job, help them land on their feet so they can support themselves and guess what? Give back and do something.
So you give them the bootstraps and you give them a boot.
We do.
you give them both. You just don't say, here's your boot and go. You say, I'll teach you how to lace
them
too.
Teach them how.
And you're such a pro at this that almost every question I had literally as you're speaking, you answered
it. Yeah.
But I am curious, is there a way for someone to sponsor one of your young adults? Like, can you take on a particular family and do they get to connect with that family?
They can. And again, it depends on who that client is. In some of our programs, it's a little more structured and there are legal hoops that client anonymity is important, especially with foster care and the younger children. But the majority of our clients are over 18, and not only would they welcome you sponsoring them, they do a thank you letter. We do mentorship.
Well, you guide them.
We guide them.
Yeah,
we want people to get involved.
And I like that Eckerd Connects also has a belief in God. I mean, all of a sudden, certain people would say, well, you shouldn't talk, but we should talk about faith, right? And respect for self, and that everybody is unique in their own way.
Every organization is a little different, and there are organizations that are preaching organizations that do a lot better than us.
Yeah.
People ask me what's Eckerd's model, and I've thought a lot about this and read different things, and I think the best illustration for our position as it relates to faith, I mean, we would really follow the teaching of St. Francis, who says, preach the gospel every day, and if you have to, use words.
Yeah, and treat people the way you want to be treated. And Eckerd Connects focuses on the family. It focuses on the client. Eckerd Connects want to see that person thrive and do well and become a functioning member of this great nation.
Nobody wants to stay on welfare. Everybody just wants an opportunity.
Thank you for saying that.
And that's what we're looking to do is to empower people with the opportunity. It's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just hope. Hope's part of it.
Yeah. Determination also.
But how do we get more people to stay engaged and involved in nonprofits such as Eckerd Connects? Because we know people right here in Brevard who is retired, have a couple of hours to give per month, maybe a week. They do have some money in the bank because they got a little change coming in now. How do we get more people to say, listen, I want to leave a better footprint behind, and I want to do this?
One little step at a time. And You know, I just encourage folks, just do something. Take one step, and then two, and then three, and then four.
And spread the knowledge. And spread the education.
And, a couple things I would encourage you. Just send me an email, rojones@eckert.org. Please, just reach out. I'd love to plug you in. I'd love to find out what your passion is and see if I can find a match for you in the organization. You know, with 50,000 clients, 166 offices, and 20 states, trust me, we've probably got something that you could get plugged into.
Right. You did it to me again, Mr. Jones. I was just going to ask for your website.
The website's really easy, Eckert.org. And so there's a lot there. And so please reach out to us. You can call me on my cell phone anytime, 434-258-4416. And that's Roy Jones at 434-258-4416. We want to plug you in to what we're doing right here in your community. You have a chance this holiday season to help people in need.
I know. Paul has given us, what, 1 minute? We have 1 minute. And, you know, when the clients in the local community is engaged, when the local community is engaged in the client's care, how wonderful that is, because the success rate for the community goes up.
And it
was such a beautiful thing, right?
One helps the other. You know, I can promise you there will not be a wasted moment, a wasted second, a wasted dollar if you get involved in Eckert Connects.
Right.
It's going to come back to you in spades. You are going to love working with these young people and helping them transform their life.
And I like that not only are you all finding solutions, but you're holding yourselves accountable for every dollar that people give to you, because it's transparent. It's on your website.
Everybody can see it everywhere.
And again, that's
really just the first step. That's the least we can do. And so, we want people to get involved.
So we have 30 seconds. Any events coming up that we should know about?
Well, there's all kinds of
events. So go on the website.
There's lots of things happening. Again, there'll be some events at the county level for Hungry for Hope. So be on the lookout for that. It's happening statewide. It's happening in multiple states. So get involved this holiday season.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, for joining us. Thank you for your 35 years plus of service.
I know.
It's been an absolute plethora of information today. I'm so excited. And thank you all our listeners for joining us today on Viewpoint with Zita and Friends.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.